Welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Train podcast series. I am Joseph Wood. I'm riding solo today. Shout out to my man Patrick Irvin, always holding it down on the back end. Welcome back to another episode. This is going to be a good episode because we got a great young man on the show for us today. I'm telling y'all, pull out your pen and your pad, put your thinking cap on, relax, have some fun, because you know we have fun, but it's a great interview. But before we do that, you already know that the Freedom Train podcast series is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit the website at www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the code of conduct, how you yourself can become a member, how you can donate, how you can get involved in the initiatives they have. Also, check out that Learning Center tab. A lot of great resources. But also on the website, there's an Amazon Smile logo. Click on that logo and it allows you to sign up for the Amazon Smile program. So the Amazon Smile program allows you to support a nonprofit organization as you shop. So you go to AmazonSmile.com and then you register for, you sign up for the website, you pick the nonprofit organization you want to support. Bam, you're in there. Go ahead and make your purchases. A portion of your proceeds go to the organization. Make sure you pick PACTSINC.org. And while you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. That way you can learn more about myself, Patrick, Queen Shelby, Queen Candice, Enigma, Cliff, and all the wonderful podcasts that we got going down right here. All right, we got that out of the way. Let's go ahead and buckle your seatbelt because we're about to take this train to a whole nother level. So this gentleman that we have on the show today, my first time meeting this gentleman was a couple years ago at a poetry event. And now I got there late, so I missed him actually reciting his poetry. And I'm mad I missed that, right? I'm mad I missed that. But I did get a chance to interact with him, and he left a great mark on me. He had these shirts, and I still got my shirt, and I still wear it all the time. That I am African shirts, so I still wear my. I got to get me a new one, but I still wear mine all the time. You probably have seen it on some of these podcasts, but definitely a great young brother, an asset to our Tallahassee community. He's a keynote speaker, a PhD candidate at Florida A&M University. He's an author. He's a father. He's a community activist. And he's somebody who has overcame adversity and learned the value within himself, found the skills within himself, because he's also an educator, and created a platform that allows him to be able to give back to his community to the best of his capacity, following his path, living his purpose. So I want y'all to put y'all hands together for Mr. Derek Standifer.
Mr. Ward, man, thank you for the opportunity to be on the podcast. It's an honor to serve, and I appreciate you for allowing me the space to serve. So thank you for that, good sir.
Oh, no problem, my brother. I appreciate you. Like I say, you, I've been paying attention to you, and you've definitely been doing your thing out here. So congratulations. I had a blast being on Terrence Barber's podcast. We had a good time. We got it in that day. So I definitely want to make sure we continue that momentum and go ahead and do our thing here. So I want to learn more about you. People want to learn more about you. So the first question is, give us some background information about yourself. Like, who is Derek Standifer, and why is helping people solve life's problem? Why is that a path that you took?
So at this core, the first thing that comes to my mind about who I am is, I'm a servant. I used to jokingly call myself a do boy, because you know we need people like her who's willing to do the work that needs to be done. Right. But I'm a servant, man. I'm a community child. So I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia, right? And I had a lot of different people praying for me, investing in me, and you know they saw something in me that I did not see in myself. And after a while, something clicked. And when you want to make people proud, man, you're willing to do things that you normally wouldn't do. You know, you're willing to muster up the energy to do things. So just that title I carry of being a servant, of being a community child, those are the core. After that, and probably the most important duty, most important role that I carry is I'm a father. I'm a seed planter of two beautifully troublemaking babies, Ayana and Derek Jr. They give me a different kind of motivation, a different kind of why that's just tenacious. You know, currently I'm a lifelong learner. Currently I'm in Florida A&M right now pursuing a PhD in educational leadership. And I'm also the founder and owner of Life is Like a Rubik's Cube. You know, we teach people how to solve the twists and turns of life, you know, by building confidence and teaching people how to solve the Rubik's Cube and developing problem solving skills. So
Okay. So and I like the cliffhanger like that, because we're gonna get back into that, but I like to make sure that we humanize people on this show, because you're a full person, you're a whole human being. So I want to give you a chance to really be humanized on this podcast right here with me. So as a lot of people, we face adversity in life. For some people, adversity makes them. For some people, adversity breaks them. But you was able to overcome setbacks and losses along your life journey and your educational journey. So, and you don't have to get into full detail, talk about what you're comfortable talking about, but can you just tell us about your journey and what motivated you to continue pushing towards your obtaining your PhD?
Man, I was thinking about it this morning. But I tell people that just because you fail, it does not mean that you are a failure. You can always bounce back from your trials and your tribulations. So I came to FAMU in 2009. And I came to FAMU with a lot of accolades. I was most likely to succeed. I was SCA president, homecoming king. I had a lot of accolades. I just had a lot of accolades, salutatorian of my high school. And I actually had a full-ride scholarship to go to Howard University.
Right.
And I missed my deadline turning the paperwork. And I had a high school counselor. She encouraged me to go to FAMU. And I blamed her for my decision to come to FAMU. I was like, you know, you should never tell a senior to go to FAMU when I had a full ride scholarship to go to Howard University. So that experience right there was a learning experience that I'm so grateful for. But 2009, I came to FAMU. Two years later, I dropped out at FAMU and I went to another university in Georgia, Georgia State University. I flunked out at Georgia State. I got a 0.0 GPA at Georgia State. I ain't do nothing there. It was ugly. But after a period of waiting tables, I learned how to serve by waiting tables. I think everybody should go through a period where they're serving people, man. It just humbles you. So I was a servant, and then it's crazy how God can, you know, how God can just move us, man. But I went in for work one day, and I got fired. I got fired one day, and that was just a catalyst for me to, you know, to finish what I started. So I came back to FAMU in 2013. At the time, I was married. We had two dogs, Maya Angelou and Imhotep. I had a pit bull named Imhotep, and I had the Chihuahua named Maya Angelou. And we moved down to Tallahassee. We had to give the dogs away, of course, but came back 2014, blessed and fortunate, highly favored. I got my bachelor's degree. A year later, same thing, I got my master's degree. And I started teaching for a little bit. I taught in Atlanta for 2 years, and I loved it, man. I had a wonderful experience. I think some people are just, you know, when they find a purpose. So I found my purpose in educating people, man. It wasn't even work to me, man. I really thoroughly enjoyed my job as an educator. But then we taught 300 kids how to solve Rubik's Cubes. I taught people how to play chess and do poetry. And then I started to experience some setbacks, man. Life started happening. 2016, a week before my 26th birthday, I lost my mother. She passed away to ovarian cancer. So those moments, you know, my birthday is a little emotional time. Mm-hmm. At the same time, my dad, he was diagnosed with cancer, and he passed away 2 years ago, from April. And I expand on him a little bit more too. Not too long after that, I went through an ugly divorce. And that left me as a full-time single father of two beautifully troublemaking babies. And, you know, I think all those pressures, all those burdens kind of made me who I am, kind of give me the strength that I have and dedication and commitment. You know, I got a full plate, but what's on the plate is motivating. You know, I got my kids looking up to me. I want them to see a great example of, you know, of how to do this thing. And then my parents, they're looking down on me, and I want to make them proud. And then I got a lot of community people who invested in me. You know, I got a people who, you know, when my parents passed away, they kind of took on that role and, you know, became surrogates. And, man, I'm, you know, even with the tragedies, I'm blessed. I'm so blessed, man. It's an honor. It's so grateful to have the support system that I have, to be on this journey that I'm on. You know, I'm just grateful for this journey called life. And I just want to make the best of the experiences that we have here.
Man, you just don't know how similar our stories are. And as you talking, I'm thinking, because I'm reminiscing, because like when I got the fam, man, I think I walked around with like a 1.6, 1.7 GPA for about 4.5 years. You know, I was just there because I really had no idea what I wanted to do. And you know, like you said, learning, having to serve people. Mine was in the form of throwing newspapers. We had to, between 2 and 5 in the morning, we had to get out there, throw newspapers and hurricanes, whatever it is, you couldn't miss a day. So it taught discipline, responsibility, all these different things. It wasn't the greatest, but it was something you had to go through and just pushing through adversity. So definitely congratulations, and I'm proud of you for pushing through adversity because that made you the man you are today. And as I'm gonna keep repeating, you're definitely an asset to our community. Also, one of the things I admire about you is how you present yourself, because I can see myself as a young man being able to relate to you, because not only do you look like me, you have your own lane, but you sound like me and you articulate. Because you know how you can hear somebody and they're articulate, but it don't necessarily resonate. The tone and everything don't necessarily resonate with you. But with you, all of that resonates, and that educator lane. So I can see why people gravitate towards you, and I can see why you have the success that you have, because the package that you bring, the way you present yourself, the person you are, the man you are, is genuine, and you are well put together, you're educated, and you're just out here doing it, man. The sky's the limit for you. Whatever you want to do, you're going to be able to do.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Nah, no problem, man. You deserve that. You deserve
it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So we talked about poetry, right? And you're part of one of what I consider one of the flyest poetry groups on the face of this earth, right? So, you know, you got your background in poetry. So,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How did poetry become a part of your life? And also, how has poetry helped you in overcoming your losses?
It's an honor to be a part of Black on Black Rhyme. Mm-hmm. Black on Black Rhyme. Before the pandemic, you know, everything kind of shifted with the pandemic. But Black on Black Rhyme was the longest running poetry show in the country. And you know, I say this all the time, but my tutelage in Black on Black Rhyme was, I think that's, you know, why I was sent here to Tallahassee, because I grew way more. I grew in Black on Black Rhyme to astronomical heights. And I say, you know, I'm working on my third degree, but I learned more from Black on Black Rhyme than I could have ever learned from any other entity. So Black on Black Rhyme gave me confidence. And it started in high school. In high school, I had crooked teeth, you know, so I tried to find a way where I could find something that I could be confident in that's me and my lane. And at the time, poetry wasn't really for cool kids. You know, you don't do poetry. I'm about to do poetry. Mm-hmm. So I just like, man, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. And I just started doing it with passion and energy. And I developed a skill for it. I just started writing. Then I, you know, came to Tallahassee and fell in love with Black on Black Rhyme and hustling. And it gave me an outlet to turn my pain into power. I say this all the time, man. When it comes to people need outlets, everybody need an outlet. My outlet just so happened to be writing. And I say this all the time, man. Poetry is a gift and a curse. You know, when I'm writing, sometimes, you know, I get on stage and, you know, people, they hear the poems or whatnot. But, you know, sometimes when you write these poems, man, the pages are stained with tears, you know, because it took a lot to get out of that. Right. So, you know, I definitely learned how to turn my pain into power when it comes to writing. My daughter, she's 7 years old. She got 2 poems memorized. I think the oratorical ability, people who are able to speak.
Yes.
You know, if you're able to speak, 10% of the people are able to speak. 90% of the people are afraid to get in front of people and open their mouth. Mm-hmm. So you know, when you're one of that, when you're part of the 10%, you know, now you're trying to, now I'm in a position of trying to sharpen the skill. Okay. I can get in front of people. I get nervous, and I still get nervous. I still get the butterflies or whatnot. But one of the things, and that humbles me, that keeps you humble. But one of the things that I made it a mission to do is continue to get better. Continue to get better. Find new ways to perfect the craft. You know, started out with poetry, and then I switched over to writing speeches. And so now I deliver keynote speeches and stuff, just because, you know, black on black rhyme, poetry, they're kind of in the same field. And this past year, I competed in a Toastmasters International Speech Contest. And I made it all the way to the divisional rounds before I was knocked out. I got third place in the divisional rounds. But just that experience, man, just the whole notion of I can do this. People listen to me when I got something to say. And now the challenge is to make sure whenever I open my mouth, it's something that's effective. It's something that, you know, people will listen to and people can take away from and use it to go out there and serve other people. You know, right. I think our greatest gift that God given us, the greatest thing that we can do with the gift that God has given us is to serve mankind and womankind. So, you know, God give you a gift, you got to use it. You got to use it. And if you don't use it, it's a slap in the face to everybody who, you know, right, who's missing out on your your presence. So,
right, right. So around the time where you learned about Black on Black Ryan, did you know about any of the other poetry troops around FAMU?
Yes and no. So I started Black on Black Rhyme. I don't know. There was an open mic on campus that the Delta, I remember this like it was yesterday. There was an open mic on campus that the Deltas were hosting. I was a freshman. So I do poetry. I sign up and I did my poem and people were like, "Hey, man, you got to come to Black on Black Rhyme." They started talking about, like, I went, I had a wonderful time. And then it just so happened to coincide with Black on Black Rhyme week. And wow, man, that's all I can say is wow. Black on Black Rhyme week was filled with a lot of people who I seen these people on Deaf Poetry Jam. I seen these people killing stages. And, you know, I'm in the same room with these people having conversations with them. And I was like, this is, you know, it's almost like God just opened up the gates of heaven and was like, right, okay, here you go. Then I knew I was home. So to answer your question, that same year I was actually a founding member of Voices. I was a founding member of Voices, one of the Voices Poetry Organization on FAMU's campus. Quentin McCluskey Smith and Jaslyn Adams, they started it. Right. And I just so happened to be a part of that first group, that first year of initiation. So I did know about other organizations. And then Florida State had Poetic Lyricism. So we used to compete with, you know, we used to do these collegiate slams and we used to compete with Poetic Lyricism. And that was a friendly competition, you know, steel sharpened steel type ordeal. And then, of course, back home in Atlanta, you know, Atlanta has a real good solid poetry scene as well. So I didn't really get into the poetry scene in Atlanta until I moved back to Atlanta, though. I didn't know about it like that. Then when I moved back, I didn't realize poetry was one of those things where it's a poetry open mic every night.
Yeah.
People pay features to come, people host. I had no clue. So now I'm a part of the poetry society, poetry world. And we just had a Black and Black Round, we just competed in Southern Fried. Southern Fried is actually the largest poetry competition in the country.
I heard about it.
Yeah, we competed in Southern Fried this past year. We got a top five finish actually out of the
that's what's up.
27 teams. If four teams made the final stage, we were that fifth team, you know, they could have made it. So
that's what's up. Cause it's amazing the evolution of Black on Black Rhyme. I got to FAMU in 2002, and I remember some of my homeboys dragging me to it because they say some girls was there, you know, back then. Say some girls with them there, and then we went and like our mind was blown by the skill level, and it was at Keith's house over by Rickards at the time, and then just seeing it be able to grow from there to what it is now, internationally known. So shout out to Keith.
Grow from an apartment to be an international organization, man.
Man, look at him.
A testament to the leadership and the growth and the progression. So yeah.
Shout out to Keith, shout out to whole Black on Black Rhyme, everybody. So, all right, you a black man who has an interest and a philosophy of solving life's problems based off of solving the Rubik's Cube.
Mm-hmm.
We don't see that every day. That's not what we see every day. Now, I'm a historian, so I know my history about my people. I know when we get interested in something, we get interested in it. And we take it and we throw our own flavor on it and we jazz it up.
Yes, sir.
So you know, it's like that pot of gumbo. You're gonna put your own seasonings on it and make that thing hit. And that's what you did with the Rubik's Cube. So give us the history behind this. Like, how did you become interested in the Rubik's Cube? How did all of this happen? And how did learning the Rubik's Cube and becoming interested in it lead to you creating a philosophy for navigating life?
So I started, I first was introduced to the Rubik's Cube in high school. My best friend at the time, he taught me how to solve it. And he was solving it with fluidity. It was so easy for him to solve it. Man, look, you got to show me that, man. Like, you got to show me, whatever I got to do, tell me what I need to do and I'll do it. Right. So we spent a couple of weeks learning how to solve the Rubik's Cube, and I was committed to it. So after a couple of weeks, I picked it up, learned how to solve it. And then, you know, like you say, man, when you get interested in something, you start putting your own flair onto it. So I was thinking of new ways to be innovative. So at first I wrote a poem called Women Are Like a Rubik's Cube. It was a poem dedicated to my mother. So I wrote a poem and compared my mama to a Rubik's Cube. And, you know, so I thought, okay, cool, I like this. Then I had to write a speech, an inspirational speech for Toastmasters. And this is what birthed Life Is Like a Rubik's Cube. I had to write a speech for Toastmasters. And I don't know the concept. I mean, you know, the concept of putting the steps together, and I just juxtaposed them to solving life. And it made sense to me. It came together. So the concept of Life Is Like a Rubik's Cube, there are five steps. The first step is to believe. A lot of people pick up the Rubik's Cube and they don't believe that they can solve it. My first attempt, man, it's too hard. I can't solve it. It's too hard. I can't do it. And that's a lot of people's first inclination. And I started to realize a lot of people got skills and talents that ain't got nothing to do with the Rubik's Cube. And they could do it, but they don't have the belief. They say, I can't do it. It's too hard. So, you know, that was a similarity. Step two is solving your cross. You know, so when you think about crosses, I think about reasons and whys, and a lot of people use, you know, religion as a foundation for them to keep pushing as a source of motivation. So I decided to, you know, my cross, what are my whys? And I thought about the people that motivate me, the people that influence me, the people that I have to take care of, the people that took care of me, and that became a why. Step three is filling in the corners. So that's immersing yourself in an environment. That's the people and the environment that you immerse yourself in. You know, we're a product of our environments. You know, if you want to be A1, you find A1 people to be around. You got to put yourself in an A1 environment. That's just, it's common sense. If you know, we're practicing social distancing right now because of COVID. And if you want to get sick, you go out there, hang around with people who got COVID, no mask on, no vaccinations. And that's the same thing when it comes to success. If you want to be around successful people, you know, if you want to be successful, you need to find successful people to be around. You know, during my second stint at FAMU, it made sense to me. When I saw all the people who were sitting on the front row making straight A's, I said, I need to be sitting on the front row. Everybody makes straight A's, sit on the front. I need to sit on the front row. Everybody who makes straight A's, go to the professor's office. So, you know, they leave breadcrumbs behind for you to pick up. So you just need to follow the breadcrumb. And step four, solving the Rubik's Cube, is to take it to the next level. Let's continue to grow. Never get content. You know, the day that we stop growing is the day that we die. I had an opportunity to meet Frances Cresswell Sing, and you know who she is. But
yes,
I had an opportunity to meet her, and she came to FAMU doing the MHOTEP conference, and I served on a panel with her. And in my mind, I said, this lady is almost 80 years old, and she's still serving. She's still serving Black people. She's still serving. You know, most people, you know, I've done my life's work. I'm good. And that right there planted the seed for me to, you know, never get content with where you are. Like, keep growing, keep getting better. And then the fifth and the final step is to see the bigger picture. And that's to keep your commitments. And I didn't implement that step until I went back to FAMU and I finished what I had started. So, you know, after dropping out of school, I went back and got my bachelor's. You know, I was blessed and fortunate. I got my master's. And, you know, after the believing in myself and after developing this concept of keep growing and keep getting better, I said, might as well try to shoot for the PhD. And we right now, I can see the finish line. We in the last little leg. So that's what we're working on right now. That's the milestone we're trying to accomplish now.
Okay.
So I just juxtaposed it to my life story. So, yeah.
Right. Now, that's, man, look, that's brilliant. Like I say, that's how you put your own flavor onto something.
Thank
that's
you,
how you
Thank
take That's how you take them concepts and you do it. No, for real. Look, that's how you reach people. Because, all right, you know how it is sitting in the classroom and the teacher talking. And you might as well be speaking Mandarin right now. Hey. I'm not feeling you. Because you don't feel you. You don't even feel what you teaching. But then there are some classes that you go to and they hit you right here. They hit you in your heart. They hit you in your soul. They hit you in your mind because they know how to reach you, because they know their stuff, but they believe it too and they feel it.
That's different.
But that's you.
Yeah, man. I'm going to tell you a story about what you just said.
Go ahead.
I taught for 2 years. I started teaching that in 2016 I taught for 2 years. Last year, I couldn't go to my first kid's graduation because of COVID. Mm-hmm. It was an online graduation. I was hurt by that. I wanted to see my, as a teacher, I saw a quote that every year you get a family and, every year they got to leave. But once your students, man, they always your kids. They always, you got a certain level of connection, a certain level of care for your kids. But this year they had an in-person graduation. I had to be there. It was no way that I was going to miss it. And when I got to the graduation, man, it was so crazy. One, my kids still remember me from the ninth grade year. Two, I had a couple of my students come up to me and it was crazy. It was a beautiful experience. But some of them were saying, man, Mr. Standifer, why you leave? You should have stayed, man. We miss you so much, man. I wouldn't have graduated if it weren't for you. A lot of folks, it was crazy. I was being brought to tears just the appreciation that they had for me being in their lives. And one of my students, he said, man, I looked you up on Facebook. You did not, he said, he inboxed me to come to the graduation. He was like, I needed you to come to the graduation. And I didn't reply. He said, I didn't reply. And he showed me the message that he sent me. I have two Facebook pages. I didn't check the other. I ain't checked the other one. So he did reach out to me. And he was like, man, I'm so glad that you came here. So, them teachers that have that love and that care for their students, man, them students gonna remember you and they want to do things for you to make you proud, man. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, because every student isn't the same. Some students learn different. Some students come from different circumstances. And as an educator, you got to understand, you got to be a human first and understand that it's going to be a different way to reach every student. But you got to find a way to reach them students. You got to meet them halfway. Got to meet them where they are so you can inspire people. That's what educators are here to do. We are here to inspire people. Mm. So. Hey man, you like keep doing your thing, my brother.
That's the goal, man. Right. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. As long as I got breath in my body, man, I'm gonna keep serving, man. So
right. So help us. So you told us your philosophy around the Rubik's Cube, but help us understand a little more. Cause you look, I got a little tiny Rubik's Cube on my dress over there. I'm not gonna lie. You the reason why I got that Rubik's Cube. Being serious. Because I saw. Look, man, you be solving. I'll be watching your interviews and I'll be seeing you solving the Rubik's Cube while you interviewing the person. And I'm over here like, look, this brother showing out on us now. Like, it's stunting on us now. But help us understand the Rubik's Cube better. Like, what is the Rubik's Cube? Like, how do you break it down? How do you solve it? Like, how do you really get your mindset around and get into the place to where you can actually solve this Rubik's Cube?
I tell people all the time that the hardest people to teach how to solve the cube are the people who don't believe that they can solve it. I teach kids all the time how to solve this Rubik's Cube, and it's so easy to teach kids because they haven't developed the I can't mentality. They haven't developed that mentality of I can't. And when our kids, so I started this, it's a side note, I started this phrase, I am African, not African. And I started giving out these wristbands when I was teaching. Cause I got tired of my kids telling me what they can't do. Y'all, we come from a people who invented thinking, and y'all keep telling me what y'all can't do when it comes to thinking. Don't make sense to me. So we chanting it. I am African, not African. So that used to be a class chant. Then we got wristbands done. I got shirts and stuff done now. But the Rubik's Cube, the concept of the Rubik's Cube is to really simplify life. A lot of times people overcomplicate life. You know, they think that solving life is these complex series of algorithms and twists and turns that can't nobody solve. And that's not the case, man. So with solving the Rubik's Cube, I don't know anything about any algorithms. I don't know anything. No, it's, I mean, they say it's math, but I don't, I can't tell you the math components of solving mm-hmm. them. I just,
right.
I know how to match colors.
Right.
You know, I know that the red go to the red side, the blue go to the blue right. side, the white go to the white side.
Right.
So with that concept, I wanted to apply the same principles to life. Y'all, life ain't all that complicated. We can simplify the colors. Let's just match colors. So, you know, I simplify the concepts of solving the twisted turns of life. If you want to do something in life, set a goal and every day do something towards the goal that you set. There's nothing hard about doing that. It's very simple. It's not an easy concept to do something every day. To do it every day, you got to do it every day. I mean, that's not easy, but it's simple to do it. It's simple. It's so simple to do.
Right.
If you want to be, you know, for instance, I'm currently in the process of writing a PhD. I'm writing my dissertation, and all my professors say, just make sure you write something every day. Don't let a day go by where you don't write, even if it's just a paragraph.
Right.
And the crazy thing about this is, right, so many people in school let days go by without doing anything, you know, yep. anything. So yep. you got to do something. Like, even if it's just a sentence, you made a sentence progress, you got to do something. So that's the whole concept of solving Rubik's Cube. And I show people, I love teaching young people, because that then inspires the adults. You know, when you see somebody who's 6 and 7 years old who can solve a Rubik's Cube,
right.
they kind of get up. Okay, I see what's going on here. You know, yeah, you can do that too. And yeah, that's the concept, man. I tell people all the time, if you give me a week time with just a couple hours, it take about 10 hours to learn how to solve a Rubik's Cube if you're doing it over time. In a 1 hour, if we're doing a 1 day session, I can teach you how to solve it in about 4 hours. And you know, if you had a patience, if you had a time commitment, and if you had a confidence, that's not the number one key. The main key is if you have the confidence. And that's what I want to show people. If you show up with belief, mm-hmm. I mean, I could take a student right now. I could take a student. They got all ifs, but they got confidence. Man, I'm probably looking at a success story. You know, I'm probably looking at a success story. I'm probably looking at a fish who not in water. I'm probably looking at a bird who not in the sky. You feel me? I'm looking at a person who out of element. They got confident. They just in the wrong environment. But if you show me somebody who got straight A's and they don't have any confidence, they don't have any belief that they can, you know, do anything with their life. You know, it's really, the grades really don't matter at that point. It really don't matter that you got these grades if you don't believe in yourself. So
exactly. Definitely have seen that before.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know that it would take that much time to teach somebody how to learn to solve the Rubik's Cube, because in my mind I was thinking sit down for maybe an hour and just go through it and be able to solve it. But nah, it's a lot more complicated than that.
And the complicated part comes in the consistency of it. You really just repeating the same step. It's, you know, step one, you got to keep repeating it until you got it. Then once you got it, let's move on to step two. Keep repeating it, and it's muscle memory. I mean, sometimes, you know, man, I know you've been in the zone sometimes, like you're doing something, you've been in the zone. Yep. And I ain't even thinking about solving it because it's muscle memory at that point.
Right.
And that's what I try to get people to get their fingers to, oh yeah, you're moving the cube without even, you matching the colors, but it's not really it's not something that's daunting. It's really not a daunting task. And every time I teach people who how to solve it, and when they done, they say that was easy. Every time, 100% of the time, every time a person learns how to solve it, they're like, hey, I could have learned how to do this on my own. But you know, so
hey, great teacher. It is. So, but also in this, what I'm hearing is you're teaching people critical thinking and problem solving skills, especially within the philosophy. So in your opinion, why is critical thinking and problem solving skills important, not just for our youth, but for our society?
Man, for everybody, especially our youth, we got to teach people how to think, man. We got these devices, these smartphones and these iPads and these televisions, and, you know, they call it smartphones, but ironically, they make us dumber. And with this, you know, People, they want the phones. They want them.
Yeah.
But they spend, you know, I read an article that said the average college graduate spends 11 hours a day scrolling on social media. 11 hours a day scrolling on social media. And you know, with these smartphones, they give you the screen time. They tell you how much time you've been on these platforms, and especially the kids. The kids can literally have their phone all day just scrolling and see nothing wrong with that. So the purpose of it, the concept of it, of the problem solving and the critical thinking piece is to get our minds just back to thinking about, you know, one, setting the goal, and two, problem solving to accomplish the goal. All goals have problems and obstacles. And now, you know, we need to understand and we need to learn how to overcome the obstacles and solve the problems. Critical thinking is so key when it comes to our success. You know, I teach my kids how to play chess. My daughters, my son, they play chess. And chess is one of those games where if I do this, then they do this, then I got to do that. Mm-hmm. That right there strengthens that critical thinking skills. And it's important. It's important in our daily lives. You know, I think about negotiating jobs, negotiating your value to a potential employer. You know, that requires critical thinking skills. You know, you just can't be a robot. When somebody tell you what to do, you go follow it blindly. You can't do that. It's cool to be loyal and disciplined and committed to the process, right?
Right.
But you also, if somebody tell you something that's detrimental, you gotta have common sense
to not do
that. Word common sense, like, it should be.
Yeah.
That word common sense. It's not. It shouldn't be called common sense. It needs to be It's another term that you call for. Common sense is really critical thinking skills. It's really those problem solving skills.
Yeah.
So you know, you see it develop. Even when it comes to, you know, now I'm in a process right now, right? I'm in school right now, but I really am. I want to get free. I really want to transition out of the workplace. And I really want to be my own boss and work for myself, because I see critical thinking skills showing me the pros and cons to having a job as opposed to working for myself. And, you know, so, you know, focus on school right now, but I do want to transition out of that, having a boss type mentality or having a boss type, you know, lifestyle. And I know growing up, you know, my family didn't believe in being entrepreneurs and being business owners. You know, my people, you know, we come from that mentality of we need to find a job. And my kids, we love to go to Chick-fil-A. They love to go to Chick-fil-A. And my daughter, she's like, I want to work at Chick-fil-A. They're so nice. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with working at anything. But I tell my kids, I tell them, y'all, let's own Chick-fil-A. Let's own the Chick-fil-A. Let's not be the basketball player. Let's be the owner of the team. Let's not be a football player. Let's own the team. Let's think higher. Let's think bigger. You know, Les Brown got a quote. You know, if you aim for the moon, you know, you it's low. It's low aim. If you aim for the stars, though, you can miss the stars and land amongst the moon. You want to aim for the stars. If you aim for the moon, you might land at the mountaintops. So, you know, you want to increase your goal so big to the point where your failing is still a success. If you fail at your goal, you still succeed in life. So, you know, so the critical thinking component, man, just forces you to get outside of your limited thinking, to expand what you think is possible for you. So, yeah, it's a lot of different benefits for that, man. We could talk about that concept.
Yeah. That's cool. That's cool, because you took all those concepts and you took your life experiences and you took your philosophy and created a business, which is a budding empire called Life is Like a Rubik's Cube. So, like, give us the story behind that. How did Life is Like a Rubik's Cube become an actual organization? Like, how did that happen? And you know, the kind of the backstory, but also the technicalities. Like, what does it take to become an organization?
So, you know, we started out with the speech. Then after the speech, I used that speech and I frameworked a book. I transferred the speech into a book. And over a couple of, I think, 3 or 4 years, I just kind of chipped away at it. And developed a book. And then when I finished the book, I launched my website, launched the book. I wrote a curriculum, and then, you know, now I've been hosting Life is Like a Rubik's Cube workshops. FAMU has brought me on to serve the students there at FAMU. I've done LILARC across several states in the Southeast and in the East Coast region. But you know, now what I'm doing is getting my foundation solidified. So I'm looking at the business documents that I need to have in order, the financial records that I need to have in order to get my certifications done. That concept of I want to get out of that hustle mentality. You know, yeah. Really just get out of that hustle mentality and take advantage of what we got to offer. You know, mm-hmm. take advantage of the things that are offered to us. So mm-hmm. I'm looking at minority businesses, grants and stuff that are available to small business owners. But you got to get the certification to do it. So now I'm in the process of knocking out the certification. And it's almost like, you know, when you have babies, when you plant a seed and you start having babies, your kids require certain things depending on the age they're in. So, mm-hmm. you know, as a baby, as a newborn, you require certain things. And as a toddler, you require different things. And as you get older, it's a different level of care. It's not more so harder or less harder, but it's just different levels of care that you got to provide. So my business, I incorporated my business, Lightlark, in 2018. And since 2018, I've just been finding and researching ways, finding mentors and woman mentors who can show me how to better develop my business and solidify it. So I recently just, you know, stuff like get a business bank account, you know, keeping your funds separated from personal and business, stuff like that. And now I'm always in a training or always binge watching stuff on YouTube about business etiquette and business yep. practices. This year, I plan on joining the Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce. It's just these things I never thought about. But once you get into it and once you start learning the language and learning about how people, these smaller nuances that how people become successful, you just make them a part of your repertoire and put them in part of your tool belt. So that's what we're doing right now, is getting that foundation stuff, my paperwork in order. You know, so when these grants are, when these opportunities are available, my paperwork in place for me to go ahead and, you know, smooth sail that thing out. So
that's what's up. That's what's up. And I appreciate like the breakdown of like how business really work and how business is really supposed to be ran. Because a lot of people think, you know, you just have an idea, just create things and just go out selling. And there's a whole legal aspect to it. There's a whole documentation aspect to what mm-hmm. we want to do, because we want to make sure people have successful businesses. And when people watch this podcast and get the information, I want to make sure they have the real account of what it takes. On top of all that hard work and motivation, you got to make mm-hmm. sure you have your paperwork straight. If your paperwork mm-hmm. ain't straight, your bills ain't straight.
Something popped in my head too about the business aspect of it too. So I'm also a part of one of my concepts is, you know, filling your corner. So I'm a part of a mastermind group. I'm actually a part of two mastermind groups.
Yeah.
And I have accountability partners. Right. But my mastermind groups are the ones who, I mean, you really got to take Lightlark serious. You got to take Life Like a Rubik's Cube serious. That's a dope concept. You got to give it the time and the commitment that it needs to thrive. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate that push. Also, you know, I told you about Africana Africaine. And here's the crossroad. A lot of times people want to do all the ideas. You want to do everything. I got, a million ideas. You want to do all the ideas. But in order for something to be great, Malcolm Gladwell, he wrote a book called The Outliers. And in The Outliers, he said you got to dedicate 10,000 hours to it. Yeah. And it's hard to dedicate 10,000 hours to two companies. You can't. Yeah. It's hard to do both. And, you know, I still be trying to find ways to make Lightlark and Africana coexist. But then I started to learn the power of outsourcing. Yes. And hiring people who know how to do things better than you, because they'll do them better for you, more efficiently, and it makes you more money and save you more money. So doing those concepts in order to juggle full plate, you got to find people who, you know, get you a strong team. So I'm building a team together, and I'm so grateful for the people that are coming into my life to help me build this team together. So that's the goal. I want to just kind of keep attracting A1 quality people who can help me and navigate me through this thing called life. That's what's up.
So you also mentioned your book, Life is Like a Rubik's Cube, is also a book. So kind of, mm-hmm. you know, what can people expect when they read the book?
I think it's a great piece to read. I'm not just saying that because I wrote it, but I really put a lot of care into it. And I sat back and read it. Tried to read it objectively. This is a great story. So the book is really, it's part autobiographical, part personal development. So I detail my journey of dropping out of school, going back to school, flunking out of another school, you know, getting married, going through a divorce, being a single father, losing my parents. I kind of break these errors in my life up, and you know, and I use the Rubik's Cube to kind of juxtapose them. So I talk about the belief, how I built my belief, and what are ways that I build belief. You know, I do vision boards, and I start these affirmation lists. Those are ways that I build belief, or solving my cross. Identify my why. I have a why wall. you know, I got a the program of my dad is on the wall. My mom's urn, my mom's urn right there. That's her. That's her. Those are ashes right there. So I keep my why front and center. So you know, I know why I'm doing this. You know, I keep that as you know, as motivation. I think about the kids that picked on me when I was young in school. I think about the people who told me I wasn't gonna be nothing. I think about the people who told me I'm gonna be the greatest thing. You know, so all those. I make everything a why. If I get a bill that I can't pay, I make it a why. I put it on my why wall, y'all. I would never be in a predicament where I can't pay my bills no more. You know, right. Anything, any right. Any reason. So step three, I'm gonna identify environments to immerse yourself in. To me, you know, after you do it, a lot of times you can get content in being familiar with your knowledge. You know, when you got a certain knowledge, you get familiar with it, and you know, you got to understand that everybody got their own lane. So it's your duty to kind of detail what your lane is to kind of explain it to other people. And then you got to be able to articulate it in a way where people can understand it. So I broke down these steps of personal development. I noticed that in our community, our young people don't know how to set goals. To me, it's common sense. Oh, set goals, common sense. Everybody know how to do it. But it ain't. It's not. It's a skill set that you got to learn how to do. You got to learn how to set goals. And it won't be I show up for this class or now I know how to set goals. You got to develop, muscle of setting goals. You got to learn how to set annual goals. You got to learn how to set quarterly goals and monthly goals and break them down into weekly goals into daily habits. You got to know how to do these things. I introduce people to other people who help me. Mentors from afar. So Brian Tracy, he has this concept of eat the frog first. You know, when you first wake up in the morning, you need to do the most difficult task on your to-do list. Yeah, you know, you feel more accomplished when you start chipping away at these big ticket items instead of not the easy things that can just easily be done. So this book really is, I use my story to show people an effective and unique way of goal setting. And if you attend the workshop, I also develop a curriculum around it. So we go through the Rubik's Cube, and I highlight, you know, we go through it as a group. We host these mastermind sessions. What's your why? How do you feel? How do you identify the right kind of people? You know, a lot of times people, you know, they grow up with people that they toxic, that's toxic to them, and they don't know how to get them out of their life. When you growing up with these, your friends. You know, y'all grew up together. Y'all been playing hide and go seek since y'all was, you know, knee high. But they toxic to your life. And how do you get them out of your circle? You know, and those are difficult decisions to make. So I kind of cover that in the book. Life is like a shoot.
That's fire, man. That's definitely, man. Y'all make sure y'all support the brother. Where can people get the book?
Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You inbox me. If you get the book directly from me, I package it up a little bit better than you would get it on Amazon. So I'm trying to figure out a way. So you get the book from me. I customize the package and I got all these add-ins and I throw in African wristbands and buttons and stuff. Just look, add it on. Blessings, just for, you know, just for supporting.
That's what y'all support the brother and get a copy of the book. Yes. So. Your journey was something that shaped you to who you are today. Looking back on your journey, what is the greatest lesson that you've learned on your journey that really helped to get you to where you are today?
The greatest lesson that I've learned. I want to say the greatest lesson that I've learned is so many. One is to keep your commitment to your commitments. You know, we got one life. And you know, when you understand this concept that we're not gonna be here forever. A lot of people want to be here forever, they want to stay here forever, but they don't add the quality into the longevity that they hear. Drake, the great philosopher Drake, he got a quote that says everybody dies but don't everybody live. And to live, you got to serve. You got to serve, and in order to serve, you got to keep your commitment to your commitments.
Right.
I can't be my best servant if I set goals for myself and I don't accomplish my goals. Like my goals are tied to my servitude. So I got to set my goals and I got to at least put effort towards accomplishing my goals in order to keep my commitment to my commitments. You don't have forever. You don't have forever to accomplish your goals, man. Time, you know, 2 years ago, man, we were chilling. Everybody was, you know, just chilling, doing their thing. Then COVID happened, shut the whole world down. And we're like, what? And that right there should have been an eye-opening experience that, man, things can happen like that, man. Things can happen like in the blink of an eye, things can happen. And while we got the breath, you know, we got to take advantage of that opportunity. I wake up every day, God, thank you for another opportunity to serve. Thank you for another opportunity to get it in today, God. Because, you know, I made the wake-up list, and there's a lot of people who did not make the wake-up list. And they made plans for what they were going to do next month. They made plans for what they were going to do tomorrow. And so, you know, I really just, the biggest lesson, man, I really want to go out this thing on E. When I transition, I want everybody to know that I gave it my all. I want my kids to know that I gave it my all. And I don't want to pass the baton to my kids and they got to start over. You know, right. When my mom died, she, you know, she was poor. She didn't leave us anything. I had to figure out how to get her buried. I had to figure out how to get her cremated, you know. In fact, she didn't even want to get cremated. She wanted to be buried, but the cost of burying versus the cost of cremating, because we had no finances to, you know, to properly send her off how she wanted to do. You know, as Black people, we gotta stop having these fish fries when people die. We gotta set certain things in place.
Life insurance.
Man, my kids, for the first thing, I need some life insurance for my seeds. If anything happened to me, I need them to be, you know, I need them to know, yeah. Hey, man, I ain't leave y'all with zero. Y'all ain't gonna start with zero.
Right.
But at the same time, in the same concept, right, I don't want to give a whole bunch of stuff to my kids. I don't want to give a whole bunch of materialistic things to them. I want them to be able to, I want my daughter, Ayana, she turned 7, on her 7th birthday, she went out there selling these wristbands, these African wristbands. And she made $177 selling these wristbands. And people came up to me and was talking about how well her sales presentation was. So I told her, I said, baby girl, you can't get that from me no more. You got to get out of my pocket. You're responsible for your own stuff now. And she found so much pride in the fact that she's 7 years old and she bought her own games. She's 7 years old and she made her own money that day. She found so much pride in it. And that's what I want to, I think that's probably the biggest lesson that I learned. I want my kids to be self-sufficient. I don't want them to have to depend on handouts. I want them to, you know, if it's no way, you got the critical thinking skills to make a way. If you're hungry, if you want this, you know how to do it. You know how to find moral ways to do it, not crazy ways. You ain't out there, you know, doing crazy stuff to get the things that you want. You're doing safe, moral ways, and ways that you can be proud of to sit here and enhance the quality of your life. So I think the greatest thing, man, I know I said a lot of things, but the greatest thing is I want to pass the baton to my kids where they can carry their own weight. They can be self-sufficient. They don't have to, you know, they don't need life insurance money. Life insurance money that my dad, that they left them was extra. You know, they already done established a foundation where they can take care of their own self. So that's the biggest lesson that I want my kids to take away, that I want to put my bark upon. So
there you go. Live full, die empty. Mm. There you go. So put down to our final question, and we ask everybody this question because we always get different answers. So if you were the all-powerful ruler of Black America, what would you change and what would your message to the people be?
Wow. I'm saying so much stuff, man. It'd be crazy. I come through here sleeping shot, right? But if I was the leader of Black America, I would implement systems where we are proud of the fact that we come from African lineages. The fact that, you know, when I first came to FAMU, I didn't, man, I remember thinking inferior thoughts. I remember code switching when I was talking to white people. Now I talk like this to Black people, then when I get in front of white people, I code switch and try to speak proper, right? Or being intimidated by white people when it comes to academic events. I remember these thoughts. And when I came to FAMU, when they told me that, you know, I came from people who invented this thing called thinking that melanin is a superpower. And those will be the things that I implement in our people, because, you know, it's confidence. At the end of the day, it all comes back to confidence. And, you know, right now, I think the biggest plague, you know, slavery happened and racism is existent. But I think the biggest plague for Black America is the lack of confidence. You know, a lot of Black people don't think that we worthy. A lot of Black people that we juxtapose us, we compare ourselves to white people, and you know, we think inferior. So the main thing that I would implement is that confidence, that love, like a deep desire, love to be African, to be this right. You know, oh man, now I got this confidence. I try to remain humble but it's almost like I gotta overcompensate. Yeah. I gotta overcompensate, right? So if I walk into a room with white people and I'm my most authentic self as much as I possibly can be, I try my best not to code switch, not to accommodate. I bring up my kids a lot because I teach my kids that God Black. And my daughter, I teach her that there's a God and a goddess, and both of them Black, both of them brown, just like you, baby girl. And she was on this is one of my proud moments. She was on the playground, and I don't know how this concept came up, but a couple of white kids and Ayana was like, they was on the playground talking, and then they brought up color of God. The girl, the non-melanated girl said that God was white. And my daughter, she said, God is Black. She said, God is brown, and goddess is brown too, just like me. And I was like, oh my God, baby girl, you only understand what that did to me. That's what I'm talking about. She was 6 years old when she articulated that God, the deity, you know, there's a man God and there's a woman God, but both of them brown like me. So that right there, man, it does so much to the confidence levels. Imagine, you know, we got a whole bunch of Black people right now walking around thinking that their God is white, like their God is white, and
right,
it's no knock against. But people gods look like them. You know, we in a world, we didn't create race. We didn't come up with this concept of race. But now that we have a concept of race, we can't be associating with other people's, you know, your God is my God. Your God that look like you is my God. It does something to the confidence level when you got Black people worshiping, a Caucasian image of God. It does something to our psyche. So if I could, it'd be a black lock dreadhead, lock Jesus in every church. All deities, all religious figures would be brown and dark skinned and from Africa. And we have this a dying association and love for the fact that we come from African, that we're not African Americans, we're not Jamaicans or Haitians or, you know, all these other concepts that our colonizers put on us. We're African, you know, we're African. That would be a beautiful thing. That would be. Francis Chris Wilson talked about that too. She talked about having these parades where we praise and we applaud that you know, we melanated, man. But if we take advantage of the fact that this is a superpower, man, that'll be a beautiful day for us. So,
man, I love that question because answers like that. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. That's how you do it. Yes, sir. So, somebody gonna watch this interview and be like, look, this young man is the truth. I need to get in contact with him. How people get in contact with you?
Man, so social media, Derek Standifer is, you know, if you search my name, you'll see my website, my links, my social media pages will pop up. Life is like a Rubik's Cube. If anything, life is like a Rubik's Cube is associated with me as well. I would encourage people to, you know, follow me on my social media platforms, go to my website, check out the work that we're doing. I must admit, though, right now I am Joseph, man. You got me out of the cave, man. I told myself that I wasn't doing nothing until I finished this PhD program. But it's just certain ones I gotta bend for, man. You are serving in the community. Same way you say I'm an asset, man. I know you're an asset to Tallahassee. Every time your name is brought up in the circles, it's always in high praise. So this is one of those things, you know, I just kind of had to bend my back for. So but right now, I'm in grind mode, man. I'm in focus mode. So
hey man, look. Anything you need help with, anything, whatever, reach out, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to help, and we want to make sure that we can help you along your journey, getting your PhD. I'm gonna go ahead and congratulate you now, Dr. Standifer.
Thank you for listening. Yes, sir.
Getting that PhD, my brother, because ain't nothing gonna hold you back. Ain't nothing ever gonna hold you back that you don't allow to hold you back. You remember that? You remember that? Ain't nothing gonna ever hold you back that you don't allow to hold you back,
Mr. Ward. I appreciate them words, man. Thank you for them blessings, King. Nah, for real, for real. Thank you.
You the truth. You the truth, my brother. And then, you know, I ain't afraid to say it. You are the truth. So
hey man, we need to do a better job of praising, you know, praising people in our, you know, that we see. You know, I'm a praise them. I tell people, hey man, keep doing what you're doing, keep serving. Whatever you're doing something right. We need to do a better job at that, man. Our people need to do a better job of uplifting and praising and showing them blessings. Cause you know, man, you have no clue what people be going through, man. You have no clue what people be going through. And your words can, man, you just got me to the checkpoint, man. Now I can get to the next level again, man. So thank you. Sir. Thank you for that, man.
Yes, sir. The sky's definitely the limit for you. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Derek Standifer, aka Dr. Derek Standifer, right here on the Freedom Training Podcast.
Appreciate you for this platform. Appreciate you for the opportunity to serve. And thank you for the work that you're doing in the community of Tallahassee. Good stuff.
Oh, man, look, I appreciate it. I appreciate it because I just want to make sure this community get better and use all the resources I have. So, my people, there you have it. I'm Joseph Voorhees, Dr. Derek Standifer. This is Freedom Train Podcast. This is how we do it. We'll see y'all next week.